The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day, gotta let it go. So
Faster Fringo!
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for June 8th, 2021. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling feed or our own dedicated podcast feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on Twitter at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red box that says sponsor this podcast, and you can set up a one-time or reoccurring donation. No obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I'm one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Iron Mike Spears. Join alongside, as always, my co-host and friend, Case Lowe. And Case, we're going to lead off tonight talking some New Japan positively for like one of the first times, I think, in the last 3 years. But how do you feel about this new quote-unquote era we are entering in?
Well, God, I mean, I guess, if we want to be kind to New Japan, we can call it a new era of the promotion. I am someone who is still very much aware of everything that's going on in New Japan, even if, especially this year, I have tapped out on watching almost everything that doesn't have at least Shingo Takagi or Will Ospreay involved in some semblance. I still think the promotion going forward, not to get too into the weeds of New Japan, this is not the Super J cast, but I still think the promotion's going to be terrible for a long time. I think they have too many issues, and belting up Shingo Takagi, which is the reason we're talking about New Japan, is not going to fix all of those issues. But I'll be damned if I wasn't walking around the city of Chicago yesterday with a smile on my face, thinking about how Shingo, the first graduate of the Dragon Gate Dojo, is now the IWGP World Champion. I think that is, I'm so stoked about it. I think it's so cool. I think that's the only word that comes to mind is I can point to this and I can go, damn, that's really cool.
Yeah, and if anything, this is just confirming something that people who follow the Dragon system have been aware of Shingo Takagi's career for the last 16 years already knew, is that Shingo Takagi is one of the most incredible professional wrestlers, not just of our era, but of all time. And it's just, it's nice, like, one, to see someone that, I mean, we spent a lot of time with Al, with Alan for the last few months talking about Shingo Takagi and his position, you know, and time. And if anything, this was just confirming our beliefs. And it's something that when we talk about the Dragon System and we talk about Dragon Gate, it's kind of like, and I think like seeing the response that I've been able to tell, everyone kind of, it seemed like within Dragon Gate and the Dragon System, one like, hey, that's one of our guys and he did the big thing. And it's kind of some, it's similar to what happened with like Akira Tozawa when he went to WWE, and whenever he comes around, everyone very kind of like smiling and like patting on the back, like, this is our guy, he's the worldwide superstar. But like seeing the response from people on the roster about Shingo's win was one of those more heartening moments, because it's something that kind of shows where the promotion has gone over the last now really 3 years.
Well, yeah, that was the most fun aspect of this for me, is seeing who was posting on social media about Shingo, because really the entire active Dragon Gate roster, from Mochizuki to Fuji to Jason Lee to Susumu to whoever, were all sending their congratulatory tweets to Shingo. And I thought that was really cool. Again, cool's the word that I want to use, but for people like us, I think we have to take a step back and go like, oh my god, a guy from Dragon Gate is now at the top of New Japan. Like, that is far and away, and I don't know if you agree with this, but to me, far and away, the greatest accomplishment of the Dragon System. And that's not to slight all of the phenomenal, consistently great work for 20 years that Dragon Gate and Toriyama have done, but this puts them in a level that, you know, they weren't, you know, it's not like Shima in the 2000 Super J Cup. It's not like when Hulk and Shingo and Speed Muscle were winning the GHC Junior Tag Belts. This is an entirely different animal. This is a, you know, for as mainstream as pro wrestling can get in Japan, this is as mainstream as it gets. And as I talked about over at voicesofwrestling.com, I once again wrote some words about Shingo. I did an article right after the Will Ospreay versus Shingo match from 2019, their best of the Super Juniors match. I talked about how, you know, at that point, Shingo had been in New Japan for less than a year. And when he came in, you know, we thought he was going to be Bushi's tag team partner. I mean, we really thought that was kind of going to be his role. And then all of a sudden he went to the finals of the Super Juniors. And then I was like, hey, maybe he's going to do this open weight thing. And that's kind of where the article leaves off, is, you know, right before he challenged Kojima and beat Kojima. And then right before his first G1 run. And it was about, you know, if New Japan really wanted to pull the trigger on Shingo, that idea of pulling the trigger to me was him winning the Never Openweight title and having matches with Ishii and with Goto and, you know, Taichi defense in there, whatever it is. And to me, I thought that was going to be a ceiling. And as time has gone on, he has just continued to blow past any barrier that New Japan has put in his way, to a point that, you know, Hiroshi Tanahashi has talked openly about whenever Shingo is in the ring, Tanahashi is watching. Like, Hiroshi Tanahashi has just become a giant fan of Shingo Takagi. That is canon in New Japan now, which I find to be this amazing thing. And it's just, it's just a great moment. It was one of those moments in New Japan this year. You know, all year really has been a source of frustration for so many people. This Road to Dominion tour has been mocked and ridiculed, and rightfully so, for some of the embarrassing cards and embarrassing houses they've drawn in Korakuen Hall. But this seemed like a universal win. I mean, anyone that just, you know, has any sort of respectable opinion seemed to really embrace the idea of Shingo winning. And not only, and I wrote about this over at voicesofwrestling.com, not only did he win, but the story here is not that Okada will eventually overcome the odds and beat Shingo. The story was that Shingo Takagi beat Kazuchika Okada in a singles match and then put him in the rear view. And I am you know, the biggest Shingo fan there is. And if you would have told me that even 6 months ago, even at the Tokyo Dome, January 5th, after Shingo wrestled Jeff Cobb and what was an incredible match, I would have said, you're out of your fucking mind. There's no way that's going to happen. But Shingo has consistently been one of the best wrestlers in the world since arguably since 2005. I mean, it's really been that long of a streak. And it's incredibly impressive. And no one deserves this more than him.
And it's something like covering him, because you wrote more about him when he was in New Japan with like the idea that like, yeah, no, his glass ceiling for a lot of people, everyone was like, oh yeah, never, like he'll be the next generation Never Star and that'll be great for him. Like that is a role that like, I felt like that if you would tell me in 2018 when he left, like, it's like, oh yeah, no, he's going to have a great juniors run. He's going to become one of the more dominant junior heavyweight wrestlers they have in this era, and then he's going to eventually be slotted in as the never openweight champion. I've been like, you know what, makes sense, not mad about it, you know, like that is like the good outcome here. And it's something that, because of all of this, I went back and read through some of the stuff I wrote, and this is not me patting myself on the back, but it's just one of those things that occasionally, like, I like going back and seeing where I thought at, where I was thinking at the time, and the way that he left Dragon Gate. And I wrote a piece right when he announced he was departing Dragon Gate in October of 2018. And the big thing is that I noted was like the biggest loss about him is the fact that he is this once in a generation wrestler, and that we weren't going to see anyone else like him in the Dragon system. And it was something that when I wrote this, I kind of viewed it more as a farewell. And of course I wouldn't know that he would be going to New Japan. I feel like that a lot of people were suspecting that he was going to go become like a big freelancer and end up with like Sekimoto and Okabayashi or like doing some All Japan and then eventually landing somewhere. But it seemed like that he was going to go the freelancer route for a while. But
yeah, the consensus, not to cut you off there, but just the consensus at the time was, okay, Shingo's going to do Big Japan. He's going to do All Japan. He's probably going to get booked in WXW. He had been there before. It seemed like he was itching to go back. He had just done Bola. I had talked to promoters in the U.S. at that time who were trying to get contact info for Shingo. They wanted to bring him over because they had the idea that he was going to be this unrestricted freelancer and he could do whatever he wanted. And of course, this was right around the time that Hiromu got dumped on his neck by Dragon Lee. And that's not faulting Dragon Lee. That's just literally what happened. And all of a sudden, a spot opened up. But this is, you know, right place, right time, and he's capitalized on it better than anybody could have imagined.
Yeah, no, and the thing that, like, the article, why I want to do this is, like, thinking about how he was as a, and I love this phrase, and I'm trying to not overuse things, as a singular wrestling figure in the Dragon system. And it's something that's really heartening to see, like, now, through almost 3 years after the fact, like, he had, it's Shingo. Like it is Shingo Takagi, it's Mr. Selfish, it is the pumping bomber, and now he's on the top of the mountain here. And it's just one of those things that's so remarkable, and it's not like I have any illusions about what his future will be, or like this is going to be like this 12-month 10 defense championship run. That's not how New Japan works really anymore. Like that's just not that era. And like those kind of runs, they're not going to have those kind of runs probably until like they're ready to like do their generational shift. But it's just really heartwarming to see, and especially heartwarming to see the response. Like we talked about it, but seeing like everyone going like, wow. And then like Yamada going like, yeah, I've already sent you a line text, but I want to say this publicly. Like, this is awesome. And no response was better than, you know, my main man, Don Fuji, apparently just getting loaded and calling everyone on the roster.
Yeah, Don Fuji took Shingo winning a match as an opportunity to get hammered, which I feel like really defines Don Fuji's personality. A very good man, one I would break edge for if he offered me a beer. I couldn't possibly turn down Don Fuji. Mike and I guess this was more Mike's crusade yesterday, and I do think this is worth mentioning. There's a few different people that I want to mention that at some point were associated with Shingo that spoke up yesterday, one of them being Shima, which I do think is noteworthy. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily think we have to dive into the history of Shingo and Shima. If you're unfamiliar with why Shima sending out a congratulatory tweet was kind of a big deal. May I direct you in the Open the Voice Gate podcast feed, Mike and I's Dragon Gate USA Rewind and Rewatch series, the episode that covered Freedom Fight 2010. So this was probably released about a year ago at this time. We went really deep into the history of Shima and Shingo and Shima and Tozawa and the friction that is there. So I would recommend that if you're not familiar with their history. We talked about it in association with the singles match between Shima and Shingo on that show. Mike, were there any thoughts you wanted to share on the podcast about Shima shouting out Shingo?
Well, most notably is when he chose to do it, you know, and the way he did it. I mean, those are two things. I mean, it did kind of seem like that, at least within like the Dragon Gate roster, there probably were people, it seemed like everyone was watching it live from when they did like the holy crap, he did it kind of tweets. And it was about 4 hours, I would say, Case, after the show was over, five maybe, that Shima did congrats and then two like just emojis and retweeted a Tokyo Sports thing.
Yeah, I thought that was the funniest part, was that it was a Tokyo Sports article that Shima like quote tweeted. It was like, congrats to that, which I think is actually a very good representation of that relationship. I thought that was a really funny takeaway from this.
Yeah, also worth noting, no one else in Strong Hearts did anything publicly.
No, but we both saw multiple tweets from Japanese accounts that are on our radar that were publicly speculating as to whether or not Strong Hearts were going to congratulate Shingo. So that is very much a thing and not just something that Mike and I are necessarily looking to stir up there.
The other
thing that I want to throw at you, have you seen the photos from Shingo's celebration dinner?
No, I have not. Can you drop a link in to it for me right now?
Yes, I can. Because there are some names here that just absolutely fascinated me, because you have, you know, some of the guys you would expect. You had Kazuma Sakamoto, you had Takashi Yoshida from the Dragon Gate roster, Yoshihiro Horiguchi, who is a Kaientai Dojo guy, Yuji Okabayashi. Obviously, he and Shingo are good friends. The name that jumped out to me here, because to my knowledge, he's never really shared a roster with Shingo, is a Dragon System alumni that was invited to this dinner in Bear Fukuda, Mike. Bear Fukuda at the Shingo celebration dinner.
Yeah, no, that is insane. I'm looking at this now. Bear Fukuda being there is just insane. And it's something that, like, you look at the roster and you look at, like, people like it. It's known that Takashi Yoshida and Shingo Takagi are very close friends. So, of course, he would be there. I know Akira Tozawa did a bunch of, like, tweets, and I think he did post something on Instagram. I'm not on Instagram as much as I used to about this. Kazuma Sakamoto, you know, of course, like, he is the Desperado. So that's really kind of remarkable to see that as well. But it's just so cool to see that. And all right, that's who I thought it was. All right, no. So the person who actually tweeted this is a wrestler from Ice Ribbon. So that's kind of cool to see as well. I forgot where I saw this. This is completely an aside. It was just something that popped me. I dropped this into the hallowed Voices of Wrestling Slack earlier yesterday. But someone else who was hanging out with people was, it seemed like Keisuke Okuda and the Great Okan were hanging out yesterday, which was very kind of tight to me as well. Did you catch this photo of the most interesting man in the world, Keisuke Okuda, with Great Okan?
I caught that. That is a deadly combination if there ever was one. Kind of had the same energy as to when Yamato and Shinsuke Nakamura used to hang out, and people would get really excited over that on Twitter. Okuda and Okan together was like, oh shit, these guys look really cool in the same photo. So I would recommend that. That's on Keisuke Okuda's social media. The Shingo dinner pics are on the Hoshi Hamuko's Twitter account.
Yeah.
And did you recognize, I know this is a visual bit, so you can go look up the photos if you're curious, but Mike, do you know who the person, the yellow beanie, is?
Yellow beanie, let me pull it back up. I clicked around.
Because in the first picture, the only reason I ask, in the first picture, it looks like Riki Choshu, and in the second picture, it looks nothing like Riki Choshu. And so I'm very confused as to who this is.
Isn't that Yukio Miyamoto?
Oh, it might be. It might be. I apologize to our Big Japan fans out there that I was unaware of that for just a second. But I thought it was Choshu at first, which to me was cool as shit, but it was not.
No. Something that I realized I've kind of picked up, the knit hat game in Japan is at another level. And I realized last year, like during the winter when it was cold, that I started wearing a lot more knit hats. Like I'm like both Kazuma and Yukio have those. I'm like, that's cool as hell. So
yeah, knit hats. Good luck. I agree, Mike Spears.
Yeah. So just kind of like just tying a bow on this in a way.
Well, let me ask you this. I've got to cut you off for the second time, but I do apologize. Have you seen the Shingo versus Okada match from yesterday yet?
No.
Okay. I would make time for it. It's the weird thing about it is it's my least favorite of the three Shingo Okada matches. I was one of the high votes on their G1 match last year that finished in my top five in the Voice of Wrestling Match of the Year poll. I think I enjoyed their New Japan Cup match more than anybody else I've seen. That might be a top five match for me this year by the time things are all said and done. I think people liked that match. I loved that match. This one I have at 4.25. Very good. Well worth your time. I think it's about as good of an atmosphere as New Japan has had in the COVID environment. So I would very much recommend it.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up like Okada, and I fired this off, but it's really not something to talk about in 140 characters. But the fact that it's kind of difficult with Okada because of he's UD06. This was post split and not the best days of Ultimo Dragon Gym Mexico. But the fact that the main event of this show was a UD06 guy in the first Dragon Gate Trueborn is something that maybe it's just me being hyper focused, but I've noticed that not a lot of people picked up on how big that was.
I think it's monumental, and it kind of goes to the talking point that I've been hammering home a lot lately, that I think just because they still have youth on their side and because of their fan base and their in-ring style, I think it just, there's a certain level of youthfulness that is prevalent in this promotion, but we're 21 years deep, almost 22 years deep into the Dragon system. And these guys, you know, again, your class one guys, your Shimas, who just had a great match with Masato Tanaka in 0-1, and your Susumus and your Horiguchis, these guys have been going strong for 20 years now. And Shingo is right there behind them at 16 years. Okada has, you know, from February 2012 through now, I don't know if there's ever been a better 9-year stretch in the history of professional wrestling. And at his core, his foundation is that he is an Ultimo student. And I think it is just a ginormous win for the Dragon system as a whole that these two guys headlined one of the biggest New Japan shows of the year.
And these are kind of the two wayward sons of the system, because Ultimo had Okada basically for like 3 years. Then I believe the story is he sold the contract. He sold like the contract that Okada had with him to New Japan, and that gave Ultimo Dragon Gym Mexico some life. And then, of course, right around then, it's kind of folklore, and I don't know necessarily how much of it's truth, how much is not. The training of Shingo Takagi might have started happening in the Toriumon days, because he debuted what, September 2014?
I think October, but same difference there. But that's why I brought up Bear Fukuda. I think that's really interesting that Bear Fukuda was a Toriumon X guy who spent a lot of time in Toriumon Mexico in 2003, 2004, 2005, and still has a relationship with Shingo. And I think we talk about it in that Freedom Fight podcast, Freedom Fight 2010, on the Open the Voice Gate, Dragon Gate USA Rewind and Rewatch, kind of alluding to some things that we have only heard in the most hushed whispers of Shingo's training and how that all came to be. I don't think anybody will ever get the opportunity to ask him about it. I don't think he'll ever speak publicly about it, but it is one of my favorite topics to explore, because Dragon Gate Forbes in August of 2004, and 3 months later, like, okay, so we have this prodigy here. He is from the Dragon Gate Dojo. And you just think about the time it takes to train a wrestler. You go, okay, I wonder when his training started. It seems like this is maybe a guy that Ultimo would like to at least fight for, would have, you know, maybe brought him down the path of Toriumon Mexico and then Dragon Door and then El Dorado. But of course, that did not happen. I'm curious, I don't know if you have an answer to this, because I know I do not, but do you know what the Okada-Ultimo relationship is like at this point?
I have not heard anything, so I either assume that it there is no relationship, or if it is, that's something that's kept in the private versus public veil that is much more prevalent in Japanese wrestling. And that's why this photo that you posted is kind of remarkable where this happens, because there is a significant veil that does not exist anymore in North America and in Europe of public life and private life for professional wrestler. That still very much exists in Japan. Like, it's one of those things that very rarely do we hear anything about a wrestler's private life. So I don't know about him and Ultimo at this point.
Yeah, I would like to know, because I've certainly heard some things about Ishimori and Ultimo not really getting along. Yes. which would make sense if you look at the career of Taiji Ishimori. I could see how there would be some hiccups along the way there, especially in the direction of Ultimo, but it will obviously never happen. But I still think, like, god damn, it would be really cool if Okada popped up on one of those Toriyama reunion shows, assuming they ever do another one. It won't happen, don't get excited about it, but it is something I like to think about from time to time.
I mean, the one thing that I'm kind of looking forward to when we look towards the summer and we look towards the doubleheader that they are having at Kobe World Cannon Hall is, I have to figure that Shingo will probably have some sort of message there, some video message like he did for the 20th anniversary show, you know?
Yeah, that's a very good point, yeah.
So I'm going to be interested to see that, and especially the fact that he's probably not going to drop, because I'll be during G1 time or right before the G1 time. He'll probably be doing that message as IWGP World Heavyweight Champion, which is another kind of remarkable thing as well.
Yeah, because they set up the match between he and Ibushi, and Shingo should, I guess with New Japan booking, anything is possible, but Shingo should win that match, and then we'll be hovering around the G1 again around that time period, because I think they're going to move it back again this year because of the Olympics. So I don't know when exactly that's going to happen, but I would think Shingo will head into the G1 and into the fall as your IWGP World Champion. So that will be very exciting. I guess while we're in this ballpark, I've been meaning to ask you this question just in private, and it's kind of a natural transition to ask you this now on the podcast, but was Ibushi at some point, was Kota Ibushi like associated with,
yes,
Toriyama X, or
yes,
at least some sort of Ultimo suit? Can you give me the information that you have? Because I really know nothing about this. Toriyama X remains, and rightfully so, my biggest blind spot in the entire history of the Dragon system.
So it's not really Toriyama X, but it is Dragon Door. The big story of Ibushi was Ibushi wanted to apply to Toriyama, but he fucked up his application.
Very odd brand. I've seen nothing has changed over the last 15 years.
Yeah, I mean, that's the folk tale, and I don't know if the folk tale is truth, but it's the thing that was always kind of talked about there. Then he was part of Dragon Door for his very brief existence, and of course he ended up with DDT, and that was really kind of where, like, he got his name, and then they did the DDG shows for a while. But yeah, he has like this weird, like, we talk about Lucha Res as like a giant tree, and that there's like the Dragon System branch, and then there was the Michinoku Pro branch. But like, I wouldn't say that there is like a branch with Kota Ibushi. He's like a bird that like perches on the tree and hops from branch to branch, you know?
That's why I asked, because I literally had no idea how to categorize him. And again, if you want to use almost like this family tree analogy, I have no clue where he fits into that. All I know is that in the handful of matches that he wrestled for Dragon Gate, the DDG show in 2008, which was Hulk, Cyber Kong, and Shingo, which is one of the best Dragon Gate trios of all time, against Honda, Hiroshima, and Ibushi. That match is incredible. And then he's in that great Triangle Gate match at Storm Gate, the pay-per-view in 2007, Fuji, Kness, and Mochizuki against Cyber Kong, Shingo, and Ibushi. So they teamed there as a trio, and that match is terrific as well. And, you know, god, the alternate universe where Kota Ibushi is just in the Dragon system is an amazing thing to think about. And I, you know, it's not like we need to sit here and go, oh, can you imagine Ibushi versus Yamato in 2009? That's not really the point of this, but it is amazing just the sheer amount of power that your loosely Dragon system affiliated guys have within wrestling right now. Obviously in Japan, Okada, Shingo, Ibushi. In America, Pac is doing his thing. Ricochet on Main Event, killing it, good for him, hope he's happy, eat shit, you know, maybe just do something different with your life if this is how you're gonna wrestle. But it's, you know, it's just amazing to see, you know, 20 years has really paid off for the Dragon system.
Yeah, and it's something that I think that it's I know we wave this flag, but I think people now really have to recognize that Dragon Gate has been the number two promotion in Japan pretty much since 2009. And then you look at, like, now Shingo Takagi, the champion in the top promotion in Japan. Pac was in the main event fighting for the number two promotion in North America's world title last week. And then you have the Seidel brothers also in AEW. You have Akira Tozawa in WWE along with Ricochet, Rich Swann in Impact. And it's just one of those things that I don't think, and of course we both believe this, I don't think enough people recognize, like, how formulative the 2006 through 2012 period was to how wrestling is right now, just because of just how the Dragon system has spread throughout the wrestling landscape.
And I guess, and this is something that, you know, we can speculate on for years, because I think we're probably at least a decade away from any of this possibly coming to fruition. There's no guarantee that it does. But you look at the behind the scenes power brokers right now, and Gato and Jado and Dick Togo and Nozawa out of the question. And realistically, you could put some Dragon Gate guys in those positions, you know, a decade from now, 15 years from now. And I think wrestling would be better off if guys from Dragon Gate were running it instead of Nozawa.
Hey, I mean, Nozawa asks the important questions, such as how many times can we do heel turns and ruin our future race? You know, I mean, like, someone has to ask the question.
Like, I complain a lot about New Japan booking because I do think it's terrible at this point. Nothing, and I mean nothing other than Monday Night Raw, is as bad as Pro Wrestling Noah booking, because I like their roster. I love Nakajima. We talked about Seki Yoshioka on the show a few weeks ago, how I think he's one of the best juniors in Japan, and he's just an absolute non-entity in Noah. From top to bottom, I just hate that promotion, and there's so many guys that I like on the roster. It's consistently the biggest bummer reading about a big Noah show and going, oh, that's what they did? Jesus Christ.
It's something that I always point this out, but now that I do this in private, but I'll do this public now. Why are people surprised that this is how Nozawa Rongai books? Have people ever looked at a Tokyo Carnival or Nozawa Bombay show?
Well, we're lucky this is as bad as it gets. We're lucky that he doesn't have access to old luchadors right now.
I mean, the number one question he's going to ask anyone who's going to come aboard is this someone that could team with me as we job to Mil Mascaris and Dory Funk Jr.?
I was going to say, you get Nakajima in the ring with Mascaris at this point, you know who's taking the fall, and it's not the guy that wears the mask.
Yep. Anything else you want to hit on before we get into the rest of the show?
I don't think so. Although now I'm thinking about how Katsuika Nakajima also spent time in Dragon Gate and how he was fucking awesome in his brief time there. Look, if you're a professional wrestler, may I suggest wrestling in Dragon Gate? It will make your career better.
Hey, there is opportunities that Japan is going to have to, like, start going through with people who are vaccinated. And I know that there are people on the radar of Dragon Gate Japan. If you're someone who takes it all seriously, you should get everything in check. This is, like, your time to really, like, get everything together before everything opens up probably, or you're able to get in the fall. Like, I don't think that's an unfair thing to say.
May I suggest entering the MLW draft? Seems like a great opportunity for a few guys.
I've noticed that Dragon Gate has not drafted anyone yet in that draft. Have you?
That is a very fair observation. I assume Dragon Gate is taking cash considerations, and we'll take, like, they'll take, like, four picks in 2024, and they'll go, okay, Court Bauer, you push this guy, this guy, and this guy. They are now ours. They are going to be with us. You have to build your promotion back from the ground up. Thank you for fostering this talent. They are now our property, and we look forward to using them until the end of time. That's how I see this relationship going on the best case scenario.
Yeah. Support for Open the Voice Gate is brought to you by Manscaped, who is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming. Manscaped offers precision-engineered tools for your family jewels. They obsess over their technology, developments to provide you with the best tools for your grooming experience. Manscaped is trusted by over 2 million men worldwide. We have an exclusive offer for our listeners today, 20% off and free shipping for the promo code OTVG at manscaped.com. In case, I don't know about you, but with how things are already this summer in the upstate of South Carolina, I am thankful for the crop preserver right now.
Mike Spears, I am literally sweating profusely as I talk about Manscaped, the Lawnmower 3.0, the Crop Preserver, among other things, because I live in an apartment with no air conditioning, and I have been feeling it lately. The other thing I've been feeling is myself, because Mike Spears, I'm lining up some dates for this weekend. I'm going to be out of the town. Genki Horiguchi's homecoming show, that could be watched on demand. I have places to be and people to see. And before I go out of the town, I'm going to make sure that I use my Manscaped Perfect Package 3.0 kit that has the best ball hair trimmer ever. The Lawnmower 3.0, the third generation trimmer, features a cutting edge ceramic blade to reduce grooming accidents. I have had zero issues with mine. It is a nice, smooth shave every time. The LED light for a more precise shave really helps me out, and it's waterproof, so I can do it while I'm singing to Morrissey in the shower. Of course, like Mike mentioned, the Crop Preserver, which keeps your balls from sweating, smelling, and sticking. I can't recommend Manscaped enough. And don't give your money to Joe Lanza and Rich Kraich. Don't use whatever their promo code is. Listen to your boys at Open the Voice Gate, okay? We're allies to all of you. 20% off and free shipping with what's the code? OTVG?
OTVG, that's the code.
At manscaped.com, 20% off and free shipping. There's no reason to have untrimmed, smelly balls this summer, because K-Slow and Mike Spears are going to take care of that issue for you.
Yeah, that's it. Just one more time. You get 20% off and free shipping with the promo code OTVG at manscaped.com. That's 20% off with free shipping, and use the promo code OTVG. It's easy to remember. It's the show's initials. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. In case, it is an interesting time in the Dragon Systems schedule. We were speculating about how things are going to go. We'll talk about Kunimoto in a bit, but boy, their first June show in the friendly confines of Kobe Sambo Hall. I'm ready to say this now. How I felt in 2018 and 2019 about Kobe Sambo Hall, that's in the rear view. Because I'll tell you this, whenever there's a show in Kobe now, I know I'm in for about 2.5 hours of a good time. And that's what I had with the show they had on the 5th.
I forget who mentioned it to us on Twitter recently, but somebody was asking us if we thought Dragon Gate was deliberately, I guess, showing more care in Sambo Hall compared to their Korakuen cards. And I don't necessarily know if I'm fully on board with that idea, but I do fully subscribe to the idea that the dire days of Kobe Sambo Hall, the most lazily put together cards with the most basically structured and uninspired Dragon Gate multi-man matches up and down the card, those days are over. This show, did the undercard do a ton for me? No, it did not. Did the last two matches deliver? Absolutely, they did.
Yeah, and attendance 309, they're still, you know, doing pretty solid what they've been doing in their home arena, basically. But even with that, with like the first hour and 15 minutes of the show, you know, you knew what you were going to get with the undercard. And after we had some tough love for the Korakuen and for Dead or Alive, everyone brought their A game to Kobe Sambo Hall on the 5th. The show will be up on the network until the 12th.
Yeah, and I would recommend, I mean, we'll go through match by match here, but there are a few matches that if you normally skip Sambo Hall shows, perhaps you're still trying to recover from your PTSD from 2018 and 2019. Like, I know Mike for a long time was not doing well when it came to seeing Kobe Sambo Hall, even on paper. This man would break out into hives. He would send me a Slack DM, be very stressed out at the prospect of having to watch one of these shows. Not anymore, though. Not anymore. These shows are a lot of fun. And like I said, there are a few matches here that I'll be sure to recommend.
Yep, yep. Just starting from the opener, we had High End make their Kobe Sambo Hall debut with Kagetora as the 5th member. I'm assuming he pretty much ran back his promo saying that he is the mic worker of this group. Benkei and Keisuke Okuda, who had entrance masks together, did not seem very pleased, but that led into our opener. It was the aforementioned Binsuke team of Benkei and Keisuke Okuda teaming with the principal, Ultimo Dragon, versus a really fun kind of trio if you thought about it. Naruki Doi with Natural Vise members UT and Funky Jackie Kamei. It was Benkei getting the win with the spear in 13 minutes and 10 seconds on Funky Jackie Kamei.
The Benkei and Kamei chemistry is going to eventually result in the most fun King of Gate match possible. Those two are going to be lined up on a singles match at some point in their careers, and it's going to rock, because in their few interactions that they've had in the year and a half that Kamei has been around, I always like the work they do together. I think, you know, Ben Kay is obviously a big, imposing, muscular figure on this roster compared to everybody, but especially compared to Kamei, he really towers over him and is twice as wide as Kamei is. And Kamei plays off that. A lot of flash pins, a lot of evasive counters in this match, and a hot finishing stretch here for what was a pretty fun opening match.
Yeah, and this is the first time we got to see UT and Kamei really team together. And we were already speculating like this could be a really fun tag team. And, you know, their teamwork together, I mean, they are two of the smallest guys on the roster. It was kind of just this really funny thing of Naruki Doi with his annoying children with this trio that they had. And they really brought it here. Kamei had a rough Korakuen debut as Funky Jackie Kamei. Brought it here again in Sambo Hall. The closing stretch was really great. The flash pins that Kamei gets, and he gets a couple deep two counts on it. And then Ben K just absolutely destroyed him with the spear, and it looked awesome.
Yeah, speared him in half, and you're exactly right. This was the rebound performance that Kamei needed. Didn't light the world on fire by any means, but he also just went back to being his usual credible self. And I chalk that quirk and outing up to likely his nerves, but also, you know, Ryo Saito can still go to some extent, but if I'm doing an intricate pinning combination with somebody down the stretch of a match, I don't know if Ryo Saito is my first pick. I don't know if he's my 15th pick on this roster for somebody that I would like to do that sequence with. So just a bad combination for Kamei. It's a shame that happened at Korakuen Hall, and it could have been hidden away on, you know, the Sambo Hall show or in Hokkaido or in Fukuoka. It's a real bummer that that happened on Korakuen Hall with so many eyeballs on it. But he rebounded here. He's fine. Like I said at the Korakuen review, like I'm saying here, I'm not worried about him. I think it was just a rare, rare misfire for Funky Jackie Kamei, which, by the way, Mike, did you see the next night on the non-televised show? They ran Don Fuji and Naruki Doi versus Susumu and Kamei, and that match went 16 minutes.
God, where were they? They would have had been around Kansai for that match. Oh, man, I wish I could see that.
Yeah, that's right.
That's very much
alley.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Oh, yeah, no, it was in Mie. It was in Mie. So, yeah, gosh. That was the semi-main event too.
Yeah, that did. Yeah, that was a five match show that did go on fourth. So yeah, man, if anybody was at that show and happens to have a fan cam, slide into our DMs.
Yeah, yeah, geez, and it's something that like Kamei, like he's still very much a prospect in a lot of ways, but he has the tools I think to just be one of the more just like energetic people on the roster. Like his top rope missile drop kick, like, for a guy his size, getting that much hang time is remarkable.
Yeah, no, I love his foundation. I love what he's working with, and I can't wait to see what he does in the immediate future.
Yep, and then you spoke of Ryo Saito in a rare three-way singles match. It was Ryo Saito, Genki Horiguchi, and Punch Tomonaga facing off against each other. Ryo Saito got the win with the rare double cross on Punch Tomonaga in 7 minutes and 14 seconds. Really was more of a handicap match in a lot of ways for old Punch Tomonaga. You know, it was the day before his former mentor / tormentor won the IWGP title, and Maruha Yusapa did not have an easy night for him.
I don't ever anticipate Shingo wrestling in Dragon Gate again unless it's like a retirement match of sorts. But if this man comes back to the promotion at any point, you can make the argument, well, you know, I want to see him against Ben Kay, or I want to see him against Okuda or Shun Skywalker, or, you know, Dragon Daya. I'm sure those two would have amazing chemistry. You get Shingo versus KZ now that KZ's all grown up. I would understand your thought process, but that thought process is wrong. What you want is for Shingo to come back into this promotion and squash Punch Tomonaga one more time, because watching this match, even before Shingo had won the belt, I'm kind of sitting here thinking, damn, I just wish Punch would get his ass kicked again. I'm not really interested in this three-way because this match means nothing. It's a weird match two three-way dance. I wish this was a simpler form of abuse. It just Punch Tomonaga getting steamrolled by Shingo Takagi.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's something that like that's the real Dragon System brand. Like the overall like Poro just wrestling fan brand would be like, oh yeah, no, I want to see like Shingo versus like Hip Hop Kakuta or SB Kento. No, the real ones, we know it's going to be a 2 minute squash of Punch Tomonaga, and he's going to use Punch Tomonaga as a stool.
Like, and that's going to be awesome. That's the thing. It's going to be incredible when he sits on Punch Tomonaga.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. You know, this match was fine. I would say. It was funny, like, there were ban attacks that Genki found a way to both hurt Punch and Ryo Saito when they were not the intended targets there, but that was really the only notable thing I had about this match.
Yeah, this did nothing for me.
Yeah, we had the, seventh Royal Sanbo this week, running down the participants: Don Fuji, Dragon Kid, Sumi Yokosuka, Yozushi Kanda, Super Shisa, Konamaui Chikawa, Sachioko Boy, Takashi Yoshida, Yosuke San Maria, Problem Dragon, Ho-Ho Loon, Eita. So I know there are people that were concerned that Eita was hurt after Corkin because, like, the Colts rarely this. Eita was in this match, and BB Hulk. The final elimination of the match was Susumu Yokosuka getting a jumbo pin on Don Fuji in 13 minutes and 21 seconds. And, you know, this was one that, like, had a really funny theme to, like, start off with, and it kind of just petered off in a way.
I'm amazed that these matches have been as entertaining as they have been. Obviously, for the first few months, it was Konami Chikawa in his undefeated streak. Once that ended, I kind of panicked. It was like, oh god, these matches are gonna become a drag again. And then last month, they did Mochizuki versus Saito in the finals, and they had, like, a 4-minute Dreamgate epic style of match. And then this time they ran it back with Susumu and with Fuji, and I thought that was awesome. This was another really, really fun Royal Sanbo match. I can't believe these continue to over-deliver.
Yeah, no, like, the reason why I said it petered off, like, Don Fuji was one of the first people in here, and it was all of the jobbers, and he just ran right through them, and he was standing around for, like, the majority of the match, like, waiting for more people to get in the ring, and that kind of popped me. Other than that, like, other funny things, Mario chased around Susumu to start, and Ho-Ho and Shisa having a regular-ass match right in the middle of the ring when everyone else is just kind of, like, taking a breath there. That cracked me up.
Like I said, finishing stretch, really solid. Susumu kicked out of the nice German suplex. He kicked
out of
a
nice one.
A Gato clutch near fall that had all of the drama of a Dreamgate match sandwiched into a match 3 Royal Sanbo Battle Royal. Incredible stuff from Fuji and Susumu. And then Susumu ended up winning with the Jumbo Nokashi. Like I said, great closing stretch. Really kind of one of those hidden, like, oh, wow, Don Fuji can still go when he needs to. I think at this point, unless it's, you know, an offshoot Triangle Gate challenge, I don't really anticipate him getting any more title matches throughout his career, but he could still hang at that level. I was really impressed with his output here.
No, Don Fuji has always been cool. And Don Fuji rocks, and you don't have to convince me that Don Fuji can still go here, Case. But it was great to see, like, him and Susumu, someone who's still probably, he'll probably get some Dreamgate shots. I don't think he'll get another run at this point. But, you know, these are two guys that are firmly in the back nine now, being able just to go out and throw it for about 5 minutes at the end. It was really sick.
Would it shock you if Dangerous Gate 2021 was headlined by KZ versus Susumu Yokosuka for the Dreamgate title?
It wouldn't, and that would be a good place for him, that, or, like, Gate of Origin, you know? Dangerous Gate is, like, the fifth of the big five shows in my mind, so, like, that does make sense there. I mean, I still think it will be a better chance than not to be KZ versus Mr. Oda City there, though.
Oh, very true, very true. That's, you know, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, because the match hasn't happened yet, but you look at that KZ possible Dreamgate run. The natural Doi match, the natural Susumu match, the Yamato match has to happen at some point.
The Mochizuki match.
The Mochizuki match, which I would say is probably the least likely of that bunch, but still one that it wouldn't shock me. That seemed like a Gate of Origin match. If they ran that at Gate of Origin, I would lose my mind. There's just so much there with KZ, and it's not necessarily a fault on Skywalker that he hasn't, outside of Ben K and to some extent Ishida, had these natural opponents that you could immediately build to. But man, KZ could really hit the ground running if he wins the Dreamgate belt in July.
Yeah, and it's something that'll be very interesting as we get closer to July 31st. Like, at this point, I'm 50-50. It sounds like you kind of are leaning more towards KZ at this point.
Very much so.
That's fair. Match 4 was a high-end versus RED tag, building up the no-rope lumberjack match in Corkin in July. It's Yamato and Kagetora versus Kai and the biggest brain in all pro wrestling, Hyo. And the big brain got it again. Double count out in 12 minutes and 12 seconds. And I thoroughly enjoyed this match.
Okay, so this one I was not crazy about it. I think that's probably going to be our most divergent take on this show. Obviously, was it, you know, atrocious? No, it was not. I thought it was probably the weakest of the big brain double countout performances we've seen from Hyo, which wasn't necessarily targeted at him, but for his, you know, for as rational as the Yamato versus Kai build has been, where on paper everything has made sense, I followed it all. I can't necessarily say I've enjoyed a ton of it, which is the weird thing about this feud. I see what they're doing. I think it makes sense. I do think the no ropes match next month is going to deliver, but I was saying this before Dead or Alive, where I'm just kind of ready for these guys to not wrestle each other for about 8 months. And so seeing them here and, you know, just a match for me did not light my world on fire.
Yeah, you know, it's something that what I really enjoyed in this case was I feel like that Kai and Hyo have a sneaky twin gate run in them. And I was like, these two scumbags work great together. And that's what kind of bought me there. Kakatora has more to bite into than he has over the last few years. And, you know, Yamato and Kakatora, like dating back to Tri Vanguard, they didn't team a whole lot, but they had great chemistry together. And I just thoroughly enjoyed it. And I will pop each time that Hyo gets double count out when they pull it off there. And just like the crowd that like it's something that I know it's somewhat over, but it's one of those things that this is the first time that the big brain was unleashed on Kobe Sambo Hall. Just like the first time that they see this and they're just like, this little fucker just cracks me up.
I am an avid supporter of the double ring out committee, which we talked about a few weeks ago, the M2K gimmick that kind of dominated Toriumon in the year 2000. All of that stuff, by the way, is on the Dragon Gate Network in the Toriumon archive section. That entire year is up there on the network now, where M2K was purposefully ruining matches by trying to get double countouts. Hyo is doing essentially the same thing. I like it. I think it's a really entertaining idea, and I would be very curious to see how that would get over if somebody tried to steal it in America. Not necessarily saying that somebody should, but I would like to see what that crowd response would be.
Oh, God, I'd imagine. In certain spheres, people would be like, this is terrible, but people like you and me would be like, hell yeah, you're double count out committee, we're here for it. But yeah, I totally understand how you might how we're diverging on this. I went 3.5 stars on this just because like I was really like, kind of feeling the match. I was like, oh yeah, no. And then of course this double count out that does not bring down my rating in this instance. And you know, I just enjoyed it, but I totally understand with like Yamato and Kai, we've been talking about this, it feels like, for almost a year now. Or it'll be close to a year coming up on the Dangerous Gate 2020.
Yeah, which I still think that's the high point of the feud. I don't think any of their in-ring has delivered to the extent that I would have wanted it to, but the initial turn, Kai turning in that Dangerous Gate 2020 cage match, perfectly executed, really a phenomenal, phenomenal heel turn. And unfortunately, again, the feud has been very logical. It's a weird one where I can't really complain about the booking. I just haven't liked any of their matches a ton, and that has been the bummer because they've essentially been paired off with one another for 7 months now.
Yeah, no, and it's one of those things that like I'm glad that it's out of a title picture in a way and they're kind of sequestered here, but then now it's like, okay, after this match happens, there's still 3 weeks till Kobe World, and do I necessarily believe that's it? Should be it, but I wouldn't be surprised if they try to run something back and for 3 weeks build.
Speaking of Kobe World, Mike, we got a nice preview of that main event in match number 5.
Oh, not only did we have that, we had, at least for me, the eagerly anticipated reunion of Mochizuki and his top pupil from Mochizuki Dojo. It was Shun Skywalker, Masaki Mochizuki versus the Natural Vibes team of KZ and King Shimizu. KZ got the win over Mochizuki with the KZ time in 13 minutes and 34 seconds. And holy shit, this was phenomenal.
You get the Mochizuki Dojo reunion with Mochizuki and with Shun Skywalker. You get King Shimizu and KZ teaming up for the first time in Natural Vibes. And also, as they pointed out on social media, a Dia Hearts reunion between Shimizu and KZ. So much like Alexa Bliss on Raw earlier this week, a lot of lore surrounding this match. This was a ton of fun. I would not be surprised if on the second Kobe Sambo Hall show this month, we see Shimizu and KZ paired off against Naruki Doi and a partner of his choice. I think they are very deliberately trying to line up Casey against his former Dreamgate opponents. He obviously lost to Mochizuki in 2018 in Tokyo. He lost to Pac in 2019 in Hakata, Star Lanes, and Fukuoka. I don't think they can get Pac back in the country, although that would be tremendous if they could. And then he obviously took the loss to Doi last February as well. So it would not surprise me. Casey pinned Mochizuki here. My guess is when we get that card for the end of the month Sambo Hall show, we'll see KZ in some form of natural vibes against Doi and a partner of his choice.
Yeah, yeah. And it's something that I think is like, you put KZ in the ring against Masaki Mochizuki and you're going to have a good time. You have Shun Skywalker in there who, I mean, it's kind of something that Shun Skywalker, the Dreamgate champion, felt like the fourth wheel or the fifth wheel in this match.
Completely.
In a way.
And I don't necessarily think that's an indictment of Shun. Well, I guess maybe it is. Maybe it is. You could certainly push back on that. To me, it's like, okay, you've got Mochizuki and KZ. Those guys have dynamite chemistry. It's Mochizuki in a pushed, in like a featured match, which you really haven't seen him in a few months. And then one of your first King Shimizu matches. But Skywalker, I don't know if he rose to the occasion in this match.
Yeah, no, he definitely felt like a passenger here. There was like this opening stretch where they had the face off between KZ and Shun, and they were doing wacky Yave arm submissions. I was like, all right, we're going to be fine in July here. But that was really the only note I had of him here. Whereas I was like, KZ and Shimizu. Shimizu is so fucking cool right now. Like, just like he does like moves, and then he does like the Alex, he does the Alex Wright Das Wunderkind dance. His position in the full six man natural vibes dance cracks me up, and everyone loves it. Like, it's massively over. And just like, you have Masaki Mochizuki doing his favorite thing in the world to do, Case. And what is that?
That is injure KZ's midsection.
He loves to punch his stomach. He loves it.
I'm with you on King Shimizu. I think this is, like I said last week, I think it's a home run. I think it's a tremendous act that is going to keep Shimizu relevant. Like, I think this is a positive step in his character development. As we've talked about on the show before, we are not people that get bent out of shape over a 30-second dance entrance that is super over with the live audience. To me, if I was booking a promotion and I had wrestlers that were super over doing something inoffensive and then they wrestled and had great matches, to me, that would be a positive. I can see why some people wouldn't like that, but I do think those people are wrong. So to me, this Shimizu stuff is a big win. And, you know, outside of the dancing and a few air humping spots, which, look, it's Dragon Gate. That is this promotion to a T. That is the Dragon system, my friends. Outside of a few air humping spots, he is positioned as a beast in the same way that he was in R.E.D., almost because he was kind of the bumbling fool in R.E.D. He's not really positioned like an idiot in this match. He's kind of back to being a brute force. I think some people are way off base on what this gimmick is.
Yeah, and here's a big bellwether for this that I want to ask you, Case. Do you feel like that he is someone now that could have a Dreamgate shot?
I don't think just yet. But as I've said, since he put on the Ultimo Dragon mask, he is one shot put slam away from being right back in the main event scene. So, you know, if it was, now they're in the same unit, so it's not going to happen. But if it was Shimizu versus KZ at Gate of Origin, I don't necessarily think that would surprise me, because I think you could heat him up with a September Corkin and he would be more than ready to go for that big of a match. So it's in the realm of possibility. I think it would take just a little bit of work to get there, but it would not surprise me at all if it happened sooner rather than later.
Yeah. And the reason I say that is obviously he was not going to be that with Bukudomo Dragon, and towards the tail end of R.E.D. was not even sniffing the Dreamgate picture. So I think that this is positive momentum, and he does need like shot put someone and just be like, go on a little bit of a tear. But I mean, that's kind of the story about anyone he's built up for a Dreamgate match, unless like you win a tournament or you're like Naruki Doi or Yamato, who could probably say like, yeah, I want a Dreamgate shot now, please. So
if they were running the 2014 schedule, you know, around that time period where they were running a Champion Gate in Hakata right before World, and Champion Gate in Hakata was headlined by Skywalker versus King Shimizu, that wouldn't have been shocking to me. I think that's a match that would have fit that spot.
No. No. If he was in this position around Champion Gate, he could have been in that spot. He could have been in the Corkin, the traditional Corkin title match, which I guess we're not really getting this year. So, you know, things aren't as dour for old King Shimizu as one would think. But yeah, I want 4 stars in this match. This rule.
I'm at 3.75, so not far off. It's, you know, it's Mochizuki and Casey for the most part. And when Skywalker was in there, I think we've seen in the little bit of evidence that we have, Skywalker and KZ have phenomenal chemistry. They already have a banger singles match at a Kobe World. I'm not worried about what they can do. To me, the story here was the bonus treat that we got of Mochizuki and KZ beating the shit out of each other.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
We ate our vegetables and we got a good dessert there. Main event for Kobe Sambo Hall, this was Masquerade versus RED. It was Kota Minora, Jason Lee, Dragon Daya, and La Estrella versus the RED tandem of Kazuma Sakamoto, SB Kento, Diamante, and Daya Inferno. Kaito Ishida got the night off, I realized when I was watching this. The finish was Daya Inferno hitting the Inferno, which is all in undercase, all in lowercase, which is his top rope lung blower on Dragon Daya, and proceeding right after that, there is a Triangle Gate challenge that it will be SB Kento, Diamante, and Daya Inferno against the Triangle Gate team of Jason Lee, Dragon Daya, and La Estrella for 7:31.
Yeah, I believe Ishida is off this upcoming tour, these weekend shows as well. Now, he just had, as of the day we're recording this, his new theme song was announced, so I don't think he's in deep trouble. I don't think he's in the doghouse, but I do not know why he is off these shows. But yeah, he is off this upcoming weekend shows. He was not on this Kobe Sambo Hall show. This main event, though, loved it. Notebook match for me, 4 stars. A really fun match that obviously showcased the Masquerade chemistry, Daya Lee, Minora, Estrella. That's a pretty well-oiled machine at this point. I can understand if you're someone that is mainly watching Dragon Gate, Cork, and Hall shows, and then your bigger shows throughout the year, and then hunting down either just what looks good on paper or the wrecks that we throw out there throughout the year. If you're not sitting down and saying, okay, Kobe Sambo Hall show from opener to main event, here I go. I can see how the combination of RED guys in this match with Daya Inferno, Diamante, Kazuma Sakamoto, and SB Kento, how that might not jump off the page at you. That is a pretty odd collection of guys. I thought they held their own here, and I kind of thought Diamante was the star of this match.
Oh, yeah. No, Diamante was the star of this match. Again, we had tough love, or I really had tough love for La Estrella. Diamante made La Estrella look like a god, and then he did other crazy stuff. Like, I think it was on his shoulders. It was SB Kento. Jason Lee had it set up there and did a really cool Doomsday Stunner off of that I thought was pretty sick. But yeah, no, Diamante probably would have been my star of the match, and just was a tremendous near 20-minute match. And, you know, we've been saying this since December, Masquerade versus RED. Like, this is another match onto the comp tape here, and this really was a interesting match because there was a lot of heat on Daya. And, of course, Daya being out for so long, it was nice to see that and have him added into the mix here as well. It just was truly exceptional stuff. I thought it was absolutely tremendous. And the Inferno lung blower, which Inferno, now that he's back on show since Daya's around, he's been beating everyone clean with that lately.
Yeah, this is, like you said, this would be the perfect addition to some sort of RED versus Masquerade comp tape if those still existed, because this match will get lost in the shuffle. By the end of the year, we will not remember this match just looking at the names on paper, but much like I've talked about with Hyo recently and how he has really found his place on the roster. I know what Hyo is. I know who he is. I know where he fits in. Diamante, in probably a role that's more based, and I don't want to say like in a shoot, but it's not quite the gimmick, but Diamante has become an incredibly reliable base on this roster. And if La Estrella is wrestling on TV in the near future, I want him paired off with Diamante. I think those two kill it with one another. It's a little reminiscent of, and this is going to be high praise, but if you look at Joe Gagne's Twitter, at Joe Gagne, he gifted a few spots from this match. It's very reminiscent of what Claudio Castagnoli was able to do with a young Pac and a young El Generico and a young Ricochet, where those guys at one point obviously had these death-defying, spectacular, high-flying moves, but they really, I would say they needed help pulling them off, and Claudio was the help. Claudio was the base, and some of what Estrella was doing in this match was phenomenal. I mean, he is really, when he is on, he is such an impressive wrestler, and he got that little boost, he got that little aid from Diamante here. So those two were absolutely terrific, and I have been into the Dia Inferno versus Dragon Dia stuff since its start. I'm glad they're heating that back up. I, of course, called my shot the night before the show. I said SB Kento versus Kota Minoura is happening at Kobe World. No, it is not. I will take the L on that one. But the Triangle Gate match that they set up should be terrific.
And that could be happening at Speedstar Final, to be fair. Like, that's a match that, would, because the rest of the show is going to be so slanted towards Masato Yoshino, that they could do there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very interesting to me that on World, we're getting this straight Triangle Gate match, assuming they don't add more teams to the mix. It's not like between, you know, Inferno Diamante and SB Kento and then Dia Lee and Minoura, or I guess it's what, Dia Lee and Estrella. SB Kento is a burgeoning superstar. He'll get to that point eventually where you could point at him and go, he is absolutely one of the top dogs of this promotion. But that is a pretty, is it fair to call that like a standard affair Triangle Gate match? It weirdly feels small for World, but I think it has a chance to blow everyone's expectations away. I did a poor job of explaining that. Does that make sense to you?
No, because you look at the players that are still like left open at World, and Yamato's left open. Doi will be doing whatever Yoshino's doing. And then Eita, you know, he's still in the mix there. And now we're looking at, like, of course, Eita can't be in the Twin Gate team, Twin Gate match, because RED has Twin Gate belts. I don't suspect Doi did have a speed muscle challenge a day before Masato Yoshino retires. So it's shaping up already to be, at least with like the top line matches, it's kind of interesting how they're going, like Shun versus KZ. Like, I know that everyone loves KZ. KZ only had his first ever Big Show main event last year.
Yeah, last November. And
yeah, so it's interesting how they're setting up this card, because it does not feel like this is something you're going to do, making sure you get two straight sellouts in a row.
I think if the RED team, to the more, I guess, outside looking in Dragon Gate fan, at least in the West, you would, you know, put together, you know, Inferno, Diamante, and Eita, or Inferno, Eita, and SB Kento. I think the match is great. I think the match is going to be excellent. I like the match on paper, but it does feel almost shockingly sparse for a Kobe World match, where they typically load up this Triangle Gate match, and I would have expected a Natural Vibes team and a high-end team or Doi and some guys in this match. I love that this is the direction they go. I hope that Triangle Gate match gets a ton of time, and I hope there's a clean finish, because I really think it could be not only a great match, but we've talked for so long about how good these RED versus Masquerade multi-man matches have been. There hasn't necessarily been the defining RED versus Masquerade multi-man. They could be putting this match in the position to have that be the one that is ultimately remembered as time goes on and as our memories get shorter and history moves on without us. This could be the defining RED versus Masquerade match. I hope it is. I'm just shocked that this is the direction they go, given their recent history of how they booked the Triangle Gate match at Kobe World.
No, absolutely. And it's one of those things that it'll be interesting to see over the next 50 days how they further flesh out this card, because like this is on paper, you know what I mean? it's going to be tough with having KZ in a main event and Shin Skywalker the way he is to be the match of the night here. But like, it's going to take a lot, like from like the Brave Gate match, whoever Okuda has, and then whatever Sakamoto and Ishida defend against, to kind of supplant them. Like this match as like my call for, okay, this could be the match of the night. And it really could be the defining match of this comp set that we've kind of put together over the last few months. Do you have any other big thoughts about the first Kobe Samba Hall show in June before we move on to previewing this weekend's show?
Like I said, 4 stars. I think that main event is just a different enough match to where you should really go out of your way to watch it. I think it was a lot of fun, and that semi-main, Shimizu and KZ versus Mochizuki and Skywalker, also worth your time.
Absolutely, yeah. Just, and I mean, 2.5 hour watch. And really, when I say 2.5 hours, it really is like 2 hours and 15 minutes, 2 hours and 10 minutes, because the way that the VODs work, that, you know, you fast forward 9 minutes, or really 12 minutes to get to the end, get to the first match hitting the ring, and then you take out 15 minutes for an intermission. I mean, these shows are 2 hours. Like, you can crush them pretty quickly, and I heavily encourage people to go out of their way to see the entire show. It's a fun time.
Cosigned. And this weekend, Mike, we're getting a very fun show that airs on the Dragon Gate Network, essentially as a make good because the Okinawa shows were canceled.
Yeah, so originally this was going to be, or next weekend would have been the Okinawa weekend, the weekend after next. And this was just going to be a show that there was a little bit of confusion, but it was announced proudly by Genki Horiguchi on the house, Mike, this is going to be on the network. It is. And Kunimoto Joe Hall, the Genki Horiguchi Homecoming Show on the 12th. It is a 6 p.m. Japanese Standard Time start, 5-match show. But really, I'm like looking up and down this show, and all 5 matches have potential to be bangers looking at it.
Yeah, no, this is a fun card. I'm curious to see what the effort level is going to be like. Obviously, this is not one of those shows that is normally on the Dragon Gate Network. Like I said, kind of put up there as a make good, but the lineup is interesting. None of these matches necessarily jump out as like, oh my God, I have to see that. But I think all of the matches are interesting in their own right.
I mean, we'll get into this. I think one of these matches really looks exceptional. Just going to run down the card case, and we can give our thoughts. The opener, it's a 5-match show, by the way, so it's going to be another short one on the network. The opener is Don Fuji, Ryo Saito, and Binkei versus Yosuke Samaria, UT, and the freelancer Kota Umeda. Second match, Ultimo and Yazushi Kanda versus Kai and Diamante. Third match, Jason Lee and Dragon Daya versus BB Hulk and SB Kento. Semi-main event is Shun Skywalker and Kota Minoru versus Eita and Hio. And the main event, it's featuring Kunimoto's favorite son. It is Natural Vibes versus High End. The Natural Vibes team of KZ, Susumu Yokosuka, and King Horiguchi, along with hometown hero Genki Horiguchi, versus the High End team of Yamato, Dragon Kid, Keisuke Okuda, and Kagetora.
So big picture, you can just go match by match here. The opener's interesting because you've got Umeda the freelancer in there. He wrestled on Horiguchi's homecoming show last year as well. That obviously did not make tape, but is making tape this year. Match 2, Ultimo Diamante, sign me up. I'm very into that combination right now. I'm very into the Diamante right now. His stock is rapidly rising with me. Match 3, Lee and Daya versus Hulk and SB Kento. That, if Hulk is even just, you know, slightly on, if he's having an average night, that match could be a ton of fun. Lee and Dai against SB Kento. Those are matchups that sound very intriguing to me on paper. Skywalker Minoru versus Eita and Hyo. That obviously has the potential for a double countout, but I think the Skywalker Minoru pairing, especially coming off Minoru's King of Gate, that is a very intriguing combination. And then your main event, I am so excited that they're not doing Natural Vibes versus RED in this spot, just because I think we would know what that match would be. You know, Hyo would eat a backslide from heaven or the beach break or something, and it would be a pretty obvious result. I obviously think in Horiguchi's hometown that the Natural Vibes team is still going to go over, but against a high-end team that we haven't really seen them wrestle before, Yamato, Dragon Kid, Okuda, and Kagetora, that is going to be a really fun match. I am really interested in that.
Yeah, this is the match that I thought could like blow away match of the night, just because Dragon Kid and Susumu, we all know the history there. KZ with everyone on that team, that he has great chemistry with all of them. Ginky, I mean, it's Ginky Horiguchi. No one has the amount of crowd. No one's able to get the crowd in the palm of his hand like this. And it's going to be in his hometown. Like, come on. Like, imagine how rabid they're going to be to see Horiguchi here. And again, like, Shimizu with Kagetora and Dragon Kid, that he has people he can throw around. Him versus Okuda as a babyface is something that I find real interesting. And then him and Yamato have always been good in the face. Also, Kota Umeda is a very interesting person, Case.
Yeah, I don't feel like I know a ton about Umeda. The issue with him is that he, I guess he's a freelancer now. I associate him as one of, this will sound incredibly condescending, and it's not meant to be, because I know there are DDT fans that would say this exact same thing about Dragon Gate. To me, he has always been one of the like million DDT guys that just blend in with one another, where I know I've seen them work, but if you put all of them in a lineup, I'm not sure I could nail who exactly is who. I know I've seen him work. I know I think he's talented, and that is as in-depth as I can go with Umeda.
Yeah, Umeda was a member of the DDT DNA project.
Yes.
And pretty soon after the end of the project, I think it was like 2019, he retired because he was going to work in his family's. He's from Kunimoto. He's working for his family's business, and he's reappeared occasionally, and he's appeared in Dragon Gate, of course, in Kunimoto. I just find it kind of fascinating like this. And usually it was someone who's like on these shows, like we've talked about before. Shingo Takagi would always have Yuji Okabayashi and Daisuke Sekimoto on his. Don Fuji would also have Okabayashi on it. It's one of those things they like having people who are relevant to the town there. But at the same time, like, remember how much like we would see Keisuke Okuda's name pop up on the Benkei homecoming shows?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It'd be interesting to see, and especially against the team that Umeda is going up against. That's like a good bellwether to see if this guy is someone to keep an eye on and see if there's a potential here for him coming in. But it seems like that he's really a part-timer at this, but I think it's kind of fascinating about this. But this show is going to be really interesting. I remember this very vividly, Case. I don't know if you saw this on iHeartDG when it did. I wonder if Ginky's mom's going to be there with her food stall. Do you ever remember hearing those stories about that?
I don't think so. No, that doesn't ring a bell.
So I remember this during the Jimmy's days, that Ginky Horiguchi's mom, I guess at one time had a restaurant in Kunimoto, and she would always like set up like a food stall whenever they come to town. And he was always so proud. I was like, yeah, my mom, one of the most famous women in Kunimoto is coming here for this. And I'm just very excited to see if there's a chance we can get to see Mama Horiguchi on this show.
We were talking at the beginning of this show about the private life in Japan and how that's such a big thing. And Mike and I recently have kind of wandered into trying to nail down which members of the Dragon Gate roster are married and which ones are not, because I think some of the names that have tied the dot would surprise you, because they're very active on social media. You would just have no idea that this person has a family. In one of the Dragon Gate yearbooks that I just bought, I think it's the 2015 one, they do a big spread of Horiguchi hanging out with his wife and his daughter, and it is adorable. Horiguchi is hashtag girl dad personified. He's a wife guy. He's a good man. I still, like, I go throughout my life, and this is not a cheap plug, but I would recommend it if you haven't heard it. When we did the Dragon System podcast with Alan Forrell talking about Greatest Wrestler Ever, which is over on Pro Wrestling Torch right now, Alan went on this passionate rant about just how hard Genki Horiguchi tries at everything, whether it's the natural vibes dance, or it's his costumes, or it's the finishing stretch of a big match, or it's the opening match where he's just trying to get the crowd warm. Like, Horiguchi tries so hard at everything, and I'm not going to say it made me emotional. It's not like tears were streaming down my face, but it did really hit home of this is why I love this promotion. It's because no matter what, Genki Horiguchi is going to bust his ass at everything he does. So I'm stoked we're getting this homecoming show. I hope it gets a warm reaction. And this card looks like a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to watching it.
Yeah, no, it is. I can't wait for this show. It'll be a lot of fun to be able to watch it this weekend. Again, they'll be on the 12th on the Dragon Gate Network. And after that, they will be off the network until they return to Kobe Sambo Hall on the 26th. So we're probably going to be getting into some Speed Star hours, Case, I think, in future weeks.
Yeah, we do not have a plan locked down, but fear not. Open the Voice Gate will be back next week.
Absolutely. And we'll be talking about this show at the very least.
That's true, like, yes.
But we'll see how June, the rest of June looks. And we've talked about how the July schedule is looking a little thin on the network as well. But we're getting a surprise this weekend. And I'm really stoked to see this Kunimoto homecoming show. Was it last year or 2 years ago, the one that Lupus Matsutani like showed up at someone's homecoming show?
Oh, God. Was he there wrestling or just there in spirit?
Oh, no, he wrestled. You don't remember like the... I need to look this up right now.
Remember this being a thing, but I don't remember what it was. Or I guess where it was.
Yeah, no, this happened with the One Night Return was... okay, I'm pulling this up right now. Great audio here. It was in 2019, and it was in Kunimoto.
So was this on one of the Horiguchi shows?
Yeah, it was Horiguchi and Oji Shiba, because the Shiba family is from Kunimoto as well.
That's right. Oji Shiba had a very nice tweet about Shingo yesterday, talking about how he was often abused by Shingo as a second in Shingo's big matches, and how he really appreciated that time, and how he's very happy that he was able to do such a thing. Also, referee Nakagawa, I thought, had a tremendous tweet of simply saying congratulations and then two different pictures of Shingo clotheslining him over the top rope. I really enjoyed those as well.
Yeah. We talked about this earlier with Don Fuji. I did notice that like when Susumu posted this, KZ said like, oh yeah, he called me too. I checked my phone. It was at 5 a.m.
Oh boy.
Just fantastic. This 2019 Genki Horiguchi homecoming show, you had Doyoshi and Dragon Kid versus Kagetora, Martin Kirby, and Jimmy. Diamante and Kazuma versus Jason Lee and Oji Shiba. The Lupus Matsutani One Night Only comeback match. Yamato, BB Hulk, and Lupin Matsutani versus Ryo Saito, Don Fuji, and Gamma. Benkei and Shun Skywalker versus Mochizuki and Okuda. And then Genki Horiguchi, KZ, and Sumi Yokosuka versus Eita, Big R, Shimizu, and Izushi Kanda.
That's quite the card.
Yeah, God. I would have loved to see the Ben and Shun versus Mochi and Okuda match. Like, holy crap.
Yeah, that sounds excellent. That sounds like that's maybe one of those. I know the unit alignments wouldn't make any sense right now, but maybe run that back when you have the chance. That seems like a match I would like to see on tape in the year 2021.
I mean, yeah, like that would be absolutely insane. But I think that's it for us this episode, Case, unless you had anything else you want to hit on.
No, I think that's it for me. We covered Shingo, we covered Kobe Sabo Hall, and we previewed the Horiguchi homecoming show. I had nothing else on my list.
Yep, I think that'll do it for me as well. You can follow the podcast at Open Voice Gate. You can follow Case at _ in your case. You can follow me at Fujihei with two eyes like Don Fuji. But that's it for this week's Open the Voice Gate. We'll be back next week talking the Genki Horiguchi homecoming show. So for Case, I'm Mike. Thanks for listening. Take care.
When everyone is on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. No matter what you do or what industry you're in, how you communicate is key. Everything you type is equally important to collaboration, and Grammarly can help. Think of it as your AI writing partner, empowering you to communicate effectively and efficiently so you can make a bigger impact in the workplace. 96% of Grammarly users say it helps them craft more impactful writing. And as the gold standard of responsible AI, Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. By understanding your writing and context, Grammarly provides relevant, personalized suggestions. And with tone suggestions, you can navigate even the most difficult work conversations. You can also save time from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds with one click. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Coriant. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.